The Old Lady Flies Rayaal Whitfield, the Project Gutenberg ebook of The Old Lady Flies. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook, title, The Old Lady Flies, author, Rayaal Whitfield, release date, February 25, 2026, ebook 78,035, language, English, original publication, New York, Street & Smith Corporation, 1927, other information and formats, www.gutenberg.org/ebook/78,035, credits. Prepared by volunteers at Book Cove, net asterisk start of the project GUTNBRG EBOOK The Old Lady Flies asterisk, An Old Biplane Flying in the Clouds, The Old Lady Flies, by Rayaal F. Whitfield, Chapter I Sticking to His Plane. Russ Healy always insisted that the old girl understood. But Russ was that rare sort of creature, a flyer who was sentimental. Of course, on the face of things, it was sheer rot. A plane is an inanimate object, theoretically, and therefore incapable of understanding. But Russ didn't look at it that way. There was no doubt about the fact that he loved the Jenny. He'd picked her up right after the war, on a government sale. She hadn't been flown at all, and Russ had worked with her ever since that time. He joy-hopped her, taken a chance on air advertising, smoke writing, stunting. He'd even done some air surveying with her, and I think he chased boll weevils down south at one time, spraying from the Jenny. She'd cracked up with him more than once, but Russ would just patch her up and patch himself up. She wasn't a pretty sight. She was dirty, oil-stained, her wing fabric of varied colors, her struts lacking varnish. She sagged a bit on her undercarriage, but her flying wires were right. She was rigged properly for the air. She was slow, of course, powered by an old Hall-Scott engine and sluggish on the controls compared to the new ships. Just an old lady, that was all she was, an old lady, still turning a prop and taking the air, but pretty far out of date. We had 8 ships in the circus and 5 pilots. That is, we had 5 flyers who could do more than get off and land. A couple of the grease monkeys could qualify, indeed, had qualified for a license, but that doesn't make a flyer. Not by about 1,000 air hours and considerable natural ability. However, when we made the jump from the outskirts of one town to the outskirts of another, the 2 mechanics each flew a ship, and Bob Brooks, who ran the Brooks Flying Circus, flew the other. That got the 8 ships around and made a nice showing in the sky. It was Bob Brooks' wife who started the thing. She was a peach, and Bob was crazy about her. I didn't blame him. We ran into a streak of tough luck. Charlie Ryan crashed on a landing, and both he and his mechanic, riding in the rear cockpit, were badly smashed up. Then Duke Conroy got in a spin, out of a side slip, and we had to leave him at the hospital pretty badly hurt. It was then that Bob's wife had her little say. It was, in effect, that her good-looking husband keep both feet on the ground. We stayed around Los Angeles, picking up a few movie jobs and looking at the mountains and the Pacific from the air until the boys came out of the hospital. We lost a little money, then Bob Brooks called us into the big tent we slung up on the field in which we were parking and gave us a little talk. "I'm giving the air," he said. "I never did do much but ferry. I've got too much brain." He grinned, and so did we. "And now I'm not even ferrying, so we've got to cut down a bit. We'll drop 2 ships. Vance Bailey has bought that standard. Now about the other." Brooks' eyes went to those of Russ Healy, and we knew right away what was coming. It gave me a jolt because I knew Russ and I knew the way he felt. And I guess it gave the others a jolt, too. "About the other," Bob repeated uncomfortably. "I guess we'll have to let the old lady go, Russ." Well, there it was. Russ Healy blinked a couple of times. He's tall and lean, with gray, squinted eyes, and usually there's a tight little smile playing around his lips. But the smile wasn't there now. Healy shook his head slowly. Then he got a pill from the pack. "If you do," he said very slowly, "I'll just go along with her." Bob Brooks frowned. "You can have the new Waco, Russ. You can do anything with her. She's got power, climb, dive. She's an easy rider." "I'm sticking with the old lady," Russ said quietly. "When do you want me to cut loose?" I saw then that Brooks was getting sore. Russ Healy was a sweet stunt flyer. In fact, he was a good man all around when it came to air stuff. There wasn't much that Russ couldn't do or hadn't done. "Look here," Brooks said. "We can't fly a ship around if there's no one to climb inside and get at the stick. You don't expect me to let a new plane drop and hang on to a rambling wreck? Why, that Jenny is liable to fall to pieces in the first spin you get her into, and Russ Healy's eyes narrowed. Think so? He spoke grimly. Well, I'll just take her up there now and loop you ragged, and then I'll come down in the tightest spin. Yes, you will, not with me. Brooke's face was flushed. That's right, Russ said grimly. I forgot you were quitting the air. It was his tone that did it, and they had both flared, were both pretty hot. Bob Brooks glared at Russ. I'm not quitting the air until we hit Tijuana, the boss said slowly. I'll fly the Waco down. You can take that wreck of yours and cut loose anytime you like. What do we owe you? Russ Healy smiled. Not a cent, he said. I owe you $50, the final payment on that last wreck replacement material for the old lady. I'll see that you get it by dark. Then he turned and walked away, chapter II. Quick action, NEDD, Bob Brooks looked at me, shook his head slowly. I was frowning. The boys were talking together in low tones. Not so good, Bob, I said. You're cutting loose the most popular guy in the outfit, and just because he sticks by his old bus. Brooks didn't see it that way. He spoke to the rest of the gang. We're losing money. I can't fly all the ships we've got. Why should I get rid of the new ones just because I'm sentimental? This is a business, not a sob factory. There was common sense in that. We could see Brooks' side of it. And the skywriting game hadn't been so good lately. Something had to be done. I think a lot of Russ Healy, Brooks went on, looking at each one of us in turn. Even if he did hint that I was showing yellow by sticking on the ground, I like him. Some of you boys talk to him. He could store that ship up at Al Garvin's hangar. Then every month or so, I'll give him a day off, and if he's close enough, he can come back and pet it. With that final sarcasm, Bob Brooks walked out of the tent. I chased after him, having just had an idea. They don't come very often, but sometimes they're good when they do come. Russ is sore, Bob, I said, and he owes you $50. He's going to try to get that 50. I happen to know that he hasn't got it. And he's going to try to show you up, show you that the old lady can still do her stuff. Now, how's he going to do it? Bob frowned. He is, he's just talking. You know better than that, I replied. He isn't that kind. I'll tell you what he's going to do. He's going to tackle the War Aces job. That got Bob. That job happened to be one which had been turned down by 3 flying outfits and a half dozen joyhoppers who were going it alone. A fellow named Canant was directing a picture of war flying days, and he wanted some crash stuff. He was willing to pay for it, and he didn't expect the pilot to kill himself. But he wanted a crash and some tight, low spins that wouldn't be easy. Russ wouldn't do that job, Bob said. He's too wise for that. But he's sore, I repeated. It gives him a chance to show you what the old lady can do in the air. And it gives him a chance to hand you the 50 and tell you. An exhaust roar cut me short. We both stared toward the deadline. There was only one ship out of the canvas hangars, and it was the old lady, the Jenny. I swore softly. Stop him, Bob, stall him off. He's going to fly over to that field where they're doing the air shoot on. Come on, yelled Brooks and ran toward the ship. I followed. We dodged through the wash of the old lady's prop. Her engine was being tested with blocks under the wheels. We both climbed up on a wing as Russ Healy cut the throttle and eliminated most of the exhaust roar. Forget about that 50, Russ. Bob Brooks grinned. We'll call it square. Where are you going? Brooks stopped. There was a faint smile playing about Healy's lips. His eyes were narrowed. Get off that wing, Brooks. Russ' tone was hard. I'm going to put the old lady through some stunts that you'll pay coin to look at. And you'll have your 50, all right. This old girl has made plenty for you, she'll make that 50. Forget it, Bob said. If you try to do picture stuff with this. Get off that wing, Russ shouted, his face white. He knew what was coming, what would have come. Get off or I'll bounce you off. Take those blocks away, bud. Russ, I yelled desperately. Bob didn't exactly mean that about the old lady. Cool down and... The ship rolled forward from the deadline. I jumped off the trailing edge of the wing. The prop wash caught me and bowled me over a few times. Something battered against me. I sat up to find Bob Brooks sitting beside me. The old lady was climbing off the field, cross wind. We got up and watched her climb. I thought, for a few seconds, that Russ might just take her up a few thousand and do some stunts. But he didn't. He headed her northeast and flew in a straight line. He didn't even bother to get altitude. I groaned. He's heading dead for that field in the hills where they're making War Aces. He'll kill himself, sure as, Bob Brooks swore softly. Then he smiled. He owes me money on that plane. It'll take time to get cameras set up. They may not be working today. Anyway, it'll all take time. We'll climb in the DH-6 and fly over. I'll talk to Canant. He can't use Russ. He'll hand you the 50 and tell you to clear out, I interrupted. And Russell raised the devil if you try to cut in on him, Bob Brooks groaned. They'll say I rode him into being bumped off. He'll get all smashed. We've got to do something. I nodded. What? I asked simply. And that was the question, chapter III, Trouble Ahead and Below. We wasted about 5 minutes talking the thing over. Al Rogers and Dave Simmons joined us. Charlie Ryan and Duke Conroy came up. It was Conroy who hit on the idea. "Russ is a good guy, boss," he said. "He gets heated up easily, but he's all right. I'm not going to stick over here and see him kill himself for the chance of showing you up and getting $50. I know this fellow Canant. As long as he shoots the crash, he won't care about Russ. When that fellow Donnelly, who made a living by pulling off crashes for the film gang, got his, did they do any prolonged weeping? They did not. Just business, and he'd signed a paper releasing them from any responsibility, of course. I won't let Russ get hot-headed and bump himself off that way. How, I asked, are you going to stop it? Not me, Conroy said. I could lick Russ if I hadn't just come out of the hospital, maybe, but there would still be the movie gang. There's only one thing to do, we'll all fly over there and raise Mary. Great, I interrupted and grabbed Bob Brooks by the arm. But first let's call the Mammoth Film Company and make sure they're working on air stuff today. They've been shooting some mild flying, even if they couldn't get the crash stuff. Bob nodded excitedly. Get the ships out, you call up Mac, we'll fly 5 ships over, I'll ride with you, Mac. Hurry it up, they might just happen to be set for the stuff. There was a gas station about a half mile down the road which ran past the field and I trotted toward it. The other boys were moving toward the hangars. I chuckled. Russ would be sore, furious, when we flew in and busted things up. And 6 of us could do it. It was the only thing to do. I'd heard about Canant. He was an aggressive chap and he knew his air. He'd flown during the war and then he'd quit, which showed me that he had brains. It was his job now to get crash scenes for War Aces, and he was up against it. It isn't easy to crash a ship and get away cheerfully. Donnelly had done it for about 3 crashes, wing overs, and stalls. And then the engine had come back on his chest, and he was through. War Aces was a thriller, I knew, because I'd read it. It wasn't exactly highbrow, and it wouldn't take much acting, but it would take some crashing and some bang-up air stuff. If the movie bunch were working, and I had a hunch that they were, Canant would grab Russ and the old lady. And Russ was so sore that he'd forgotten all about himself. That was a cinch. He was like that. It took me 5 minutes to get somebody at the picture outfit that knew about the shoot, and they gave me a straight answer. Canant had 5 cameras out at the field in the hills back of Hollywood. He had 2 ships. He was shooting stuff. And the company was still looking for a thrill man. Did I know of one? I groaned and hung up. When I got back to the deadline, the ships were out and being tested at the blocks. I gave Bob the cheerful news. He swore a couple of times. When we hit the field, we'll set our ship down, he explained. Look out for holes, they may have been doing some wartime shell hole stuff. Mac and I will go after Russ and hang on to him. You fellows get down as soon after us as you can, in case this fellow Canant gets rough with us for breaking up the party. I'll do the talking. If things look tough, you ease up to the old lady and break a connection, Duke. Duke Conroy grinned. I'd rather talk with this Canant, but you're the boss. Well, let's get up and over there, Bob said. I started this mess and I'll finish it, and believe me when I get Russ Healy back here. I'll feel a lot better, I interrupted and meant it. Then we climbed the 5 ships and taxied out. 60 seconds later, we were off the earth and heading for the field from which they were shooting the War Aces stuff. As the DH climbed and I held the joystick back a bit from the neutral position, I shook my head slowly. Knowing Russ Healy as well as I did, I could figure trouble ahead and below. Unless we wreck things generally, I thought to myself, the old lady flies. Chapter IV, ready to fight. It wasn't hard to spot the field on which they were making War Aces, or at least a part of it. It was a level stretch between rolling hills. There were shell holes, homemade but real warlike, at one end. At the other end of the stretch, there were 3 ships. 2 of them were small, single-seaters. One, I guessed, was a baby Nieuport. Ead Seeley had one of those, but he wasn't doing any crash stuff with it, I knew that. As we circled over, I saw that they were working on the old lady. Probably they were rigging up a couple of dummy guns, or trying to make her look like a DH or a bomber of some type. It was hard to figure just what they could make the old lady look like, but they do queer things in the movies. I cut the throttle and glided down. Bob Brooks yelled at me above the whistling of wind through the flying wires. We'll be in time. They're trying to camouflage the old lady. I nodded and brought the DH down into the wind. We made a fair landing, and I taxied around and rolled back toward the 3 planes. The crowd was watching me come up, and some of the bunch on the field were staring up at the other boys. We rolled fairly close to the parked ships, and I cut the switch. Bob and I climbed down, and we were met at the wingtip by a scowling Russ Healy. Beside him was this fellow Canant, short and stocky, and dolled up as though he were going to play a round or 2 of championship golf. Brooks grinned. Hello, boys, he greeted them. Just paying you a little visit. Sort of a social call. How's the picture coming along? Kanant smiled. It'll be all right now, he said cheerfully. Healy's going to do some crashes for us and some war air stuff. If we could work you boys in, he stopped. Bob Brooks was shaking his head slowly. Russ isn't going to do any crashes for you, not in the old lady. And you can't work us in, Kanant. Russ Healy swore softly. Kanant looked sort of amused. There was a crowd of picture people around us by this time, but the other boys were setting their ships down on the field. I wasn't worried much. If it's a matter of money, Kanant said. It isn't, Brooks interrupted him. Then he grinned. I could see that Brooks was trying to get out of it peaceably if he could, and I had my doubts about that. You see, Brooks continued, we sort of like Russ around the outfit. Sometimes he has careless ideas, but he's not doing any crashing for you, get that straight. Kanant stiffened and smiled in a rather superior manner. Just then Al Rogers and Dave Simmons shoved their way to our side. Bob Brooks grinned. Did Duke go over to the old lady? He asked Simmons. Simmons nodded. With his best pair of pliers, he said cheerfully, and I saw Russ Healy straighten up and his face get hard. Brooks nodded. Russ, he said slowly, suppose you come along back with us. You can ride me back in the old lady. Maybe I was a little hasty about that ship. Maybe we can frame some way of taking her. Not a chance, Russ interrupted hotly. You fellows clear off this field. If they don't clear off, Kanant. Kanant nodded his head slowly. I looked at the director, but I spoke to Bob Brooks. I'll take this little runt, I told him. And I won't need that set of brass knuckles unless they get to piling on me too thick. Dave Simmons chuckled. Dave, about the biggest pilot in captivity, and he likes a good, uneven scrap. I'm glad we came over, he said cheerfully. Better shoot this stuff, Kanant. It'll make good war stuff. Chapter V something up. I could see, by that time, that Kanant wasn't a scrapper. He just smiled in a sort of apologetic way. If it's any of your business, he said, addressing Brooks, perhaps it might be advisable to talk things over. Healy didn't like that. He glared at Bob Brooks and said, I owe him $50, Kanant. Give it to him and take it off my stunt pay. I expected that, so did Bob. He shook his head. I'll have to look up some papers, he replied. Don't know the exact amount, and anyway, Healy is under a contract to fly for me, not for himself. We'd have to. I've busted the contract. Russ Healy exclaimed. I'll fly any way that I want to fly. The old lady's my ship. You say she's no good. I'll show you how good she is, and you'll pay money to see her in the movies. Steady, Bob interrupted him. Maybe we just better grab him, Mac. What do you think? I looked at Russ. He was pretty white around the ears, but he was still able to use his head. Better come along, Russ? It was Simmons who spoke. If you and your friends hop us, Duke'll clip a few wires with his pliers, and you never will get the old lady off, not for a few days anyway. Healy glared at Simmons. Then he looked at the director. Kanant was smiling cheerfully. There was a peculiar expression in Russ Healy's eyes suddenly. He shrugged his shoulders. All right, he said. But I'll be back in a few days, Kanant, just as soon as I work out $50 worth of air stuff for the old miser here. Kanant nodded. We'll shoot some other scenes in the meantime, he replied and kept right on smiling. Don't get hurt, Healy. I laughed out loud at that one. Kanant telling Russ not to get hurt, it was pretty rich. I'll ride back with Russ, Mac, the boss told me. You boys stay down here until we take off. I nodded and lighted a pill. Russ followed Bob Brooks along toward the old lady. Kanant shrugged his shoulders. Just one delay after another, he declared. It's beastly. Sure it is, I agreed. Times are getting tough when you can't get fellows to kill themselves by crashing planes for a few $100s. But Kanant didn't get sore. He kept right on smiling. And remembering that expression I'd seen in Russ Healy's eyes, I figured that something was up. I tried to dope out just what it would be as I walked over toward the DH, but it had me buffaloed. The old lady's appearance sidetracked me. They hadn't had much time, but already they'd mounted two guns on the old Jenny, and there was camouflage paint on her, not yet dry. There wasn't very much of it, but enough to make her look like a different ship. She'd do for a crash anyway. Russ was climbing into the front cockpit, and as he squirmed into place back of the stick, he looked at me. He was grinning. Bob Brooks was already seated in the rear cockpit. I waved a hand and went on toward the DH. The other boys were already in their planes, or moving toward them. I hadn't more than snapped the self-starter and let the prop turn over a few times when the old lady, gaudy in her new disguise, took the air. I stared at her. The dummy guns were still in place. I wondered why Bob hadn't raised the devil about that, but I figured he was glad enough to get Russ away so easily. He'll have to do some talking to keep Russ from coming back, I thought as I advanced the throttle a few notches and taxied out into the wind. Something funny in this deal, I'm sure of that. Heard a lot about this fellow Canant, and I knew a lot about Russ Healy. Neither of them, from the way I figured it, had run true to form. They'd let us set the ships down there and deliberately bust up their little party. They'd taken it pretty calmly, too. Then there had been that exchange of glances between Canant and Russ Healy. That had counted for something. As I lifted the de Havilland off the field, following the old lady, I shook my head. Something's up besides some joy-hopping ships, I said to myself. But what? Chapter VI, TRICKED into a crash. The answer came when I got up to 4,000 feet, and it came so suddenly that I almost let the DH slip into a tailspin. We'd been climbing in a wide circle, the five ships, following the old lady. And I guess we'd all been getting a kick out of those two dummy guns and the slapped-on war paint. All of a sudden, the old lady stood right up on her tail in a sweet zoom and laid over on her back. Then she came down in a pretty fair loop. I had the DH out of her way, banking off vertically. As I came around in a position to get a good look at things, I saw plenty. There were about a dozen ships in the air. At least four of them were stunting, looping, doing wingovers, immelmans, and spins. From two of them came sulfurous trails of yellow, streaming off at an angle. They had guns and were shooting them. The old lady was going down in a spin, and two planes were following her down, both streaming out yellow trails from their exhausts and spitting red from guns shooting between the synchronized propeller blades. Diving nearby was a fourth ship, with a bird standing in the rear cockpit and turning a crank in a box-like affair. Then I got it. Canant and Russ Healy had framed us. They were shooting from the air and from the ground, shooting stuff for the picture. And they were using our five ships. A screaming, wire-whistling shape dove passed the DH on the right, and instinctively I banked away. But even as I did so, I got a glimpse of a helmeted figure using a camera. He wasn't cranking it, but I guessed that he had one of the new, electrically driven ones that didn't need it. I had the DH in a spin. Bob Brooks, riding with Russ, being let in for all this frame-up, and the old lady doing all of her stuff. No wonder Russ had exchanged glances with Canant. At 3,000 feet, I got the DH out of the spin, leveled off, and gave her the gun. There were white bursts in the air, and on the ground below there were more of them. I banked over, looking for the old lady. I saw one of the circus ships going down in a steep glide, with a strange plane on her tail. A ship was looping a few thousand feet above me, white bursts on her right. Smoke was drifting all across the sky, then I spotted the old lady. She was going down toward the field, at the shell-ripped end, with one of the Niuports I'd seen right behind her. I caught sight of two cameramen, shooting up at her as she came down. I dove the DH. I was too surprised and too excited to get sore. Anyway, it wouldn't have done any good. The whole thing was plain now. I'd always given Russ credit for having brains, but I'd never given him credit for having this much. They'd had ships waiting on some other field, of course, and Russ had guessed that we'd come after him. When Bob Brooks had said he'd fly back with Russ, he'd played right into that pilot's hands. Two birds with one stone. Not only would Brooks sit in on the sky chute, but he'd be right there for the crash, the big scene that Canant wanted. I groaned. The DH was down pretty low now. I could see a ship diving off to the side of the old lady, and in the center of the shell hold area were two more cameramen waiting to shoot the crash from the ground. The old lady was slipping off on a wing now, and I knew that Russ was trying to hit the spot near the cameramen. There was the fellow grinding away from the plane at one side, too, still shooting the fake battle. I thought of Bob Brooks in the rear cockpit. He was helpless. It wasn't a dual control ship. Russ had put the old lady through every air stunt, and Bob had had to sit there and take it. Now he was in for the crash. It was a beauty. The old lady nosed right into what looked like a fairly deep shell hole. Her propeller splintered, her tail came up. I could hear her wings crackling with the engine throttled down. Then she tumbled over, upside down, and I groaned and dove the DH for a landing. The old fool, I said, and wasn't at all sure that I really meant it. Chapter VII. The only way to settle IT. When I got up beside the old lady, Russ Healy was leaning against a wheel and smoking a cigarette. Bob Brooks was limping around, trying out his left leg, and muttering to himself. Canant was standing nearby and scribbling on a piece of oblong paper with a fountain pen. Hello there, rough boy. Russ greeted me cheerfully. His head was bandaged, and a medical-appearing gentleman was putting more white stuff around his left wrist and hand. Can the old lady fly? I grunted. She wasn't as complete a wreck as I'd expected to see, and there was a reason. The shell hole was filled with nice, soft sand. She could fly, I replied. Bob Brooks limped over my way. They put one over on us, Mac, he said. They shot all sorts of stuff. They used our planes, their planes, and then even used me. I couldn't help but grin. Then the red-faced, golf-togged Kanant came over and waved a check toward Bob. "This should help," the director said. "We had to have your planes. Can't use all of it, of course. You weren't rigged with guns and stuff. But it'll help in the flashes, is it all right?" Bob took the check and I looked over his shoulder. We both gasped together. As a check, it was a masterpiece. "It's all right," Bob managed to say. Kanant chuckled. "Had to have the stuff," he said. "Needed our ships, all I could scrape together for the cameras. Most of them anyway. Of course I'll take care of Healy." Russ grinned, then his face sobered. He glared at Bob Brooks. "How about it?" he asked. "Can the old lady fly? Does she get fixed up, and do I skyride her with the outfit?" Bob Brooks looked up at the sky, and I could see that he was thinking back about 4.5 minutes to those stunts. He looked down at Russ Healy again and nodded his head. "The old lady flies," he said slowly, and that settled it. Transcriber's note. This story appeared in the August 1, 1927 issue of Top Notch magazine. End of the project GUTMBRG EBOOK The Old Lady Flies asterisk asterisk. Updated editions will replace the previous one. The old editions will be renamed. Creating the works from print editions not protected by U.S. copyright. Law means that no one owns a United States copyright in these works. So the Foundation and you can copy and distribute it in the United States without permission and without paying copyright royalties. Special rules set forth in the general terms of use part of this license apply to copying and distributing project. Gutenberg trademark electronic works to protect the project GUTMBRGTM concept and trademark. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark and may not be used if you charge for an ebook, except by following the terms of the trademark license, including paying royalties for use of the Project Gutenberg trademark. If you do not charge anything for copies of this ebook, complying with the trademark license is very easy. You may use this ebook for nearly any purpose, such as creation of derivative works, reports, performances, and research. Project Gutenberg ebooks may be modified and printed and given away. You may do practically anything in the United States with ebooks not protected by U.S. copyright law. Redistribution is subject to the trademark license, especially commercial redistribution. Start full license. The full Project GUTMBRGTM license. Please read this before you distribute or use this work to protect the Project Gutenberg trademark mission of promoting the free distribution of electronic works by using or distributing this work or any other work associated in any way with the phrase Project Gutenberg. You agree to comply with all the terms of the full Project Gutenberg license available with this file or online at www.gutenberg.org/license. Section 1. General Terms of Use and Redistributing Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. 1A. By reading or using any part of this Project Gutenberg electronic work, you indicate that you have read, understand, agree to, and accept all the terms of this license and intellectual property trademark copyright agreement. If you do not agree to abide by all the terms of this agreement, you must cease using and return or destroy all copies of Project Gutenberg electronic works in your possession. If you paid a fee for obtaining a copy of or access to a Project Gutenberg electronic work and you do not agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement, you may obtain a refund from the person or entity to whom you paid the fee as set forth in paragraph 1E8, 1B. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark. It may only be used on or associated in any way with an electronic work by people who agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement. There are a few things that you can do with most Project Gutenberg electronic works, even without complying with the full terms of this agreement. See paragraph 1C below. There are a lot of things you can do with Project Gutenberg electronic works if you follow the terms of this agreement and help preserve free future access to Project Gutenberg electronic works. See paragraph 1E below. 1C. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. The Foundation, or PGLAF, owns a compilation copyright in the collection of Project Gutenberg electronic works. Nearly all the individual works in the collection are in the public domain in the United States. If an individual work is unprotected by copyright law in the United States and you are located in the United States, we do not claim a right to prevent you from copying, distributing, performing, displaying, or creating derivative works based on the work as long as all references to Project Gutenberg are removed. Of course, we hope that you will support the Project Gutenberg mission of promoting free access to electronic works by freely sharing Project Gutenberg works in compliance with the terms of this agreement for keeping the Project Gutenberg name associated with the work. You can easily comply with the terms of this agreement by keeping this work in the same format with its attached full Project Gutenberg license when you share it without charge with others. 1D. The copyright laws of the place where you are located also govern what you can do with this work. Copyright laws in most countries are in a constant state of change. If you are outside the United States, check the laws of your country in addition to the terms of this agreement before downloading, copying, displaying, performing, distributing, or creating derivative works based on this work or any other Project Gutenberg work. The Foundation makes no representations concerning the copyright status of any work in any country other than the United States. 1E. Unless you have removed all references to Project Gutenberg. 1E1. The following sentence with active links to or other immediate access to the full Project Gutenberg license must appear prominently whenever any copy of a Project Gutenberg work, any work, on which the phrase Project Gutenberg appears or with which the phrase Project Gutenberg is associated is accessed, displayed, performed, viewed, copied, or distributed. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg trademark license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. 1E2. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is derived from texts not protected by U.S. copyright law, does not contain a notice indicating that it is posted with permission of the copyright holder, the work can be copied and distributed to anyone in the United States without paying any fees or charges. If you are redistributing or providing access to work with the phrase Project Gutenberg associated with or appearing on the work, you must comply either with the requirements of paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 or obtain permission for the use of the work and the Project Gutenberg trademark as set forth in paragraphs 1E8 or 1E9. 1E3. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is posted with the permission of the copyright holder, your use and distribution must comply with both paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 and any additional terms imposed by the copyright holder. Additional terms will be linked to the Project Gutenberg license for all works posted with the permission of the copyright holder found at the beginning of this work. 1E4. Do not unlink or detach or remove the full Project Gutenberg license terms from this work or any files containing a part of this work or any other work associated with Project Gutenberg. 1E5. Do not copy, display, perform, distribute, or redistribute this electronic work or any part of this electronic work without prominently displaying the sentence set forth in paragraph 1E1 with active links or immediate access to the full terms of the Project Gutenberg license. 1E6. You may convert to and distribute this work in any binary, compressed, marked up, non-proprietary or proprietary form, including any word processing or hypertext form. However, if you provide access to or distribute copies of a Project Gutenberg work in a format other than plain vanilla ASCII or other format used in the official version posted on the official Project Gutenberg website, www.gutenberg.org, you must, at no additional cost, fee, or expense to the user, provide a copy, a means of exporting a copy, or a means of obtaining a copy upon request of the work in its original plain vanilla ASCII or other form. Any alternate format must include the full Project Gutenberg license as specified in paragraph 1E1, 1E7. Do not charge a fee for access to viewing, displaying, performing, copying, or distributing any Project Gutenberg works, unless you comply with paragraph 1E8 or 1E9. 1E8. You may charge a reasonable fee for copies of or providing access to or distributing Project Gutenberg electronic works, provided that you pay a royalty fee of 20% of the gross profits you derive from the use of Project Gutenberg works calculated using the method you already use to calculate your applicable taxes. The fee is owed to the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, but he has agreed to donate royalties under this paragraph to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Royalty payments must be paid within 60 days following each date on which you prepare or are legally required to prepare your periodic tax returns. Royalty payments should be clearly marked as such and sent to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation at the address specified in. Section 4, Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. You provide a full refund of any money paid by a user who notifies you in writing or by email within 30 days of receipt that s/he does not agree to the terms of the full Project Gutenberg trademark license. You must require such a user to return or destroy all copies of the works possessed in a physical medium and discontinue all use of and all access to other copies of Project Gutenberg trademark works. You provide, in accordance with paragraph 1F3, a full refund of any money paid for a work or a replacement copy if a defect in the electronic work is discovered and reported to you within 90 days of receipt of the work. You comply with all other terms of this agreement for free distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark works. 1E9. If you wish to charge a fee or distribute a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work or group of works on different terms than are set forth in this agreement, you must obtain permission in writing from the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the manager of the Project Gutenberg trademark. Contact the foundation as set forth in section 3 below. 1F1F1. Project Gutenberg volunteers and employees expend considerable effort to identify, do copyright research on, transcribe and proofread works not protected by U.S. copyright law in creating the Project Gutenberg trademark collection. Despite these efforts, Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works and the medium on which they may be stored may contain defects, such as, but not limited to, incomplete, inaccurate, or corrupt data, transcription errors, a copyright or other intellectual property infringement, a defective or damaged disk or other medium, a computer virus or computer codes that damage or cannot be read by your equipment. 1F2. Limited warranty disclaimer of damages, except for the right of replacement or refund described in paragraph 1F3, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, and any other party distributing a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work under this agreement, disclaim all liability to you for damages, costs, and expenses, including legal fees. You agree that you have no remedies for negligence, strict liability, breach of warranty, or breach of contract, except those provided in paragraph 1F3. You agree that the foundation, THE, trademark owner, and any distributor under this agreement will not be liable to you for actual, direct, indirect, consequential, punitive, or incidental damages, even if you give notice of the possibility of such damage. 1F3. Limited right of replacement or refund. If you discover a defect in this electronic work within 90 days of receiving it, you can receive a refund of the money, if any, you paid for it by sending a written explanation to the person you received the work from. If you received the work on a physical medium, you must return the medium with your written explanation. The person or entity that provided you with the defective work may elect to provide a replacement copy in lieu of a refund. If you received the work electronically, the person or entity providing it to you may choose to give you a second opportunity to receive the work electronically in lieu of a refund. If the second copy is also defective, you may demand a refund in writing without further opportunities to fix the problem. 1F4. Except for the limited right of replacement or refund set forth in paragraph 1F3, this work is provided to you as is with no other warranties of any kind, express or implied, including but not limited to warranties of MERC Chanti BLATY or fitness for any purpose. 1F5. Some states do not allow disclaimers of certain implied warranties or the exclusion or limitation of certain types of damages. If any disclaimer or limitation set forth in this agreement violates the law of the state applicable to this agreement, the agreement shall be interpreted to make the maximum disclaimer or limitation permitted by the applicable state law. The invalidity or unenforceability of any provision of this agreement shall not void the remaining provisions. 1F6. Indemnity. You agree to indemnify and hold the foundation, the trademark owner, any agent or employee of the foundation, anyone. Providing copies of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works in accordance with this agreement, and any volunteers associated with the production, promotion, and distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works, harmless from all liability, costs, and expenses, including legal fees that arise directly or indirectly from any of the following which you do or cause to occur. A distribution of this or any Project Gutenberg work, B, alteration, modification, or additions or deletions to any Project Gutenberg work, and C, any defect you cause, Section 2. Information about the mission of Project Gutenberg. Project Gutenberg is synonymous with the free distribution of electronic works in formats readable by the widest variety of computers, including obsolete, old, middle-aged, and new computers. It exists because of the efforts of hundreds of volunteers and donations from people in all walks of life. Volunteers and financial support to provide volunteers with the assistance they need are critical to reaching Project Gutenberg goals and ensuring that the Project Gutenberg collection will remain freely available for generations to come. In 2001, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation was created to provide a secure and permanent future for Project Gutenberg and future generations. To learn more about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation and how your efforts and donations can help, see Sections 3 and 4 and the Foundation Information page at www.gutenberg.org, Section 3. Information about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation is a nonprofit 501(c)(3) educational corporation organized under the laws of the state of Mississippi and granted tax exempt status by the Internal Revenue Service. The foundation's EIN or federal tax identification number is 64622-1541. Contributions to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation are tax deductible to the full extent permitted by U.S. federal laws and your state's laws. The foundation's business office is located at 41 Watchung Plaza 516, Montclair NJ 7042, USA, +1-862-621-9288. Email contact links and up-to-date contact information can be found at the foundation's website and official page at www.gutenberg.org/contact, Section 4. Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Project Gutenberg trademark depends upon and cannot survive without widespread public support and donations to carry out its mission of increasing the number of public domain and licensed works that can be freely distributed in machine-readable form accessible by the widest array of equipment, including outdated equipment. Many small donations, $1 to $5,000, are particularly important to maintaining tax-exempt status with the IRS. The foundation is committed to complying with the laws regulating charities and charitable donations in all 50 states of the United States. Compliance requirements are not uniform, and it takes a considerable effort, much paperwork, and many fees to meet and keep up with these requirements. We do not solicit donations in locations where we have not received written confirmation of compliance. To send donations or determine the status of compliance for any particular state, visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. While we cannot and do not solicit contributions from states where we have not met the solicitation requirements, we know of no prohibition against accepting unsolicited donations from donors in such states who approach us with offers to donate. International donations are gratefully accepted, but we cannot make any statements concerning tax treatment of donations received from outside the United States. U.S. laws alone swamp our small staff. Please check the Project Gutenberg web pages for current donation methods and addresses. Donations are accepted in a number of other ways, including checks, online payments, and credit card donations. To donate, please visit www.gutenberg.org/donate, Section 5. General information about Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. Professor Michael S. Hart was the originator of the Project Gutenberg concept of a library of electronic works that could be freely shared with anyone. For 40 years, he produced and distributed Project Gutenberg ebooks with only a loose network of volunteer support. Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as not protected by copyright in the US unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we do not necessarily keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper. Edition, most people start at our website, which has the main PG search facility, www.gutenberg.org. This website includes information about Project Gutenberg, including how to make donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter to hear about new ebooks.